Hi race fans, this is Braxy. All the way from Australia, but now back in Laguna, in one of the best GPs in the land. Hope you're enjoying it here at Laguna. I certainly am. So keep listening to MotoGP OD and make sure you don't OD on too much information.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode 238 for Friday, the 30th of July 2010. My name's Martin Darlington. I'm in the UK, and joining me as ever is Jim Race across in California, just back from Laguna Seca. How you doing, Jim?
I'm a little tired, Martin.
Yeah, you must be like having jet lag without having traveled.
Well, indeed, a fair amount of road work, and there's some epic stories that I might pull out for you guys as time goes on, some very funny little things that happened during the trip. I do want to, though, want to say thanks to a few people that helped me out on this trip. Barry Gilson and the Celtic Racing crew, William Tim for the lift down to Laguna Seca, very cool. That was kind of a bit of an epic trip. Marco and Laya of Dorna, very specifically with an assist from Gavin Emmett for getting for the first time for MotoGP OD media credentials, and that was extremely helpful. I had some great hospitality from a whole bunch of my friends in the paddock and elsewhere, people that put us up, people that fed us, absolutely fantastic, and Chuck Forker for the ride home. Now we got to get the hard cards for Indy, and I've already got that underway.
Brilliant stuff. Absolutely fantastic. It really feels like we're moving the whole process of the show on.
Absolutely.
And helping with that is donations. And this week, fantastic this. We've got Paul End, Chris Gilbert, Big John Hart, Christina Sewer, Paul Pacey, Scott Bolton, Justin Hare, Felix Gonzalez, David Head and David Armstrong have all donated recently. Stickers are being mailed out this weekend to you guys, and thank you very, very much. Without the donations, we don't do advertising. We're not sponsored by anybody. Without the donations, we wouldn't really be able to carry on. So you guys keep us going. And this week, I think, is a bit of a special week, and I'm going to let you run through the interviews you've got lined up, Jim.
I do have a few. Having access to the paddock made things incredibly easier, and we had the opportunity to talk to a whole bunch of people. I've got a couple of interviews with Tom Houseworth, Lucio Ceccanello, which is really nice to talk to him face-to-face, Nicky Hayden, Paul Denning, but wait, there's more. Michael Siz, of course, who's been on the show before and is immensely popular with you guys out there. Adrian Hawkins, who is his chief engineer, and that was really a neat interview. And Michael Barnes, who finished second in the e-power race, and he's an American racer. One Oscar Herrera, who was a privateer, and who actually granted us a whole bunch of hospitality and kind of provided our headquarters while we were down there. The Superbike post-race press conference, and I bet there's probably three or four others that are on there that I've left off this list. You haven't been able to hear really anything yet, so you're going to be just as surprised and astounded as the folks out there in MotoGP OD land.
Oh, no, it's fantastic sometimes. I mean, it's good to hear when we do have the opportunity, because the interview's been done a few days earlier, to listen through it so we can discuss the points brought up. But from my selfish listener point of view, my fanboy point of view, listening to the show when I don't even know half of the stuff's going to be in it is really exciting. We've had some good emails this week. Jules Cisek, co-founder of the show and fellow co-host, went down with Jim, and Jules has asked us to say thanks to Liam and Michelle, Jay, Matt, Chuck, Mark Brax, Gordon Howell, and Pole Position Travel, to all the folks who showed up for the meet and greet, and most of all to Adam Silver and his nephew Teddy for the company and facilities. And Jules was really buzzed about that. Couldn't be on the show this week, unfortunately, as he, what did he say? Damn planes don't have Wi-Fi yet.
Yes.
He's actually in mid-travel.
Exactly. The meet and greet itself, also, went really cool. It was kind of funny when Jules and I, we hadn't talked beforehand, and I had some issues with my phone this weekend. My charger went astray, and so I kind of had to conserve battery power as the weekend went on, and it got worse and worse. But we both went up to the location at noon on Saturday, but we never actually talked about exactly where the location was. And so I actually went up there with Braxy. I dragged him up from the media center. I said, hey, you know, because he listens to the show. I said, come on up and meet the folks. He's like, okay. So Mark and I get up there at like 11:55 or something like that. We're standing there. Some people start to gather. We start talking to them. It's probably 12:05, and somebody comes running down. I don't know. We probably had 8 to 10 people with us. Somebody comes running down, and it turns out that Jules is up doing his own about 30 yards up the way. So we dragged everybody together, and we had a great time. There's a cool group shot on Facebook, and it was very cool to see everybody. And stickers were handed out with abandon. In fact, that happened all weekend. It was amazing, Martin. I could not walk anywhere all weekend without people going, are you Jim Race? And in fact, one time I was having a conversation with somebody, and there was somebody else standing there, and they asked me that question. Like, how did you know that? And they were like, I recognize your voice. And I'm kind of freaked out.
That's really cool.
Because I really don't think I have a special voice at all. I think it's relatively normal. And in fact, it used to bug the heck out of me. I always thought that my voice was too high. Anyway, yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome.
No, I think sometimes there's even someone without a very distinctive accent, you can still have a distinctive voice. And but that's really cool. People are like, hey, I've heard you.
Yeah. At least I don't.
And how many people said to you, God, you look very different from how I'd imagined?
There were a few. Well, Lucio did.
Oh, yeah. You said you sound more. No, you look Scottish.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. What we're going to do, you guys, is we're going to kind of sprinkle these interviews throughout the show. If we come up with a certain point that's talking about a certain team or person, we'll pop that in there. This is going to be a long show, so Martin, you and I should get rolling on it.
Yeah. Another email we had. Big John Hart, donator this month and huge fan of the show, friend of the show. He wrote about the Austin, Texas race circuit, which they've said that there's an 800-acre site has already been purchased to the east of Austin. There's a press conference scheduled to divulge more details, and the U.S. Formula One Grand Prix, which was last held in 07 at Indy, will be returning to the Formula One calendar in 2012. And it's being designed by Herman Dilke, the chap who built the tracks in Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, Shanghai, and Istanbul. Istanbul I quite liked. The rest of them, you can keep it. But
I can absolutely agree with that. The Istanbul track was fantastic. But the rest,
Yeah, exactly. But then Jules reports that you guys heard over the PA an announcement that Laguna Seca Mazda Raceway has renewed its contract with Dorna to host a MotoGP for another 4 years, which is fantastic news. And all the NIMBYs, the not in my backyard types around that area, had been trying to get the place shut down. It stuffed it to them big time. So it probably, because I can't see a third MotoGP race happening in America purely because of the cost of getting there and back. So it probably makes Big John's news about the Austin circuit a bit irrelevant for now. There's also rumours appearing in the British press, the motorcycling press, that from next year we may get all three classes appearing in Laguna Seca, which would be good.
I heard that as well. And what would probably come in would be at the sacrifice of the AMA participating in that particular round.
Yeah. There was always that rumor running, wasn't it, that because it was such a twisty turning track, very rarely upright, they were concerned that the fastest 125s would be faster than the slower 250s, and the faster 250s would be faster than the slower MotoGP bikes. It turns out that's absolute nonsense. It was just purely because they only have so many race calendar days they're allowed to run every year, is that right? And so they had to combine MotoGP with the AMA, and there wasn't enough time in the day to get all three classes through, plus the AMA races.
That's essentially so. The secondary part is that Laguna Seca, being a park, a literal state park at this point, is also limited on the number of days that they can have essentially loud races. That's part of the NIMBY bit. And it was interesting because I hadn't been down there in a couple of years. I missed the race, unfortunately, the last few years. And I was amazed at how much more built up it was around the track. I guess I shouldn't be because it is a beautiful area, but that definitely surprised me. I do remember, however, back in, what was it, 89 or 90, when they had all three classes there anyway, and it was really cool. Mm. And, you know, they had the 250s there for quite some time. But I would love to see it back. I would love to see it back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on to news.
Indeed.
The Suzuka 8-hour race has just happened, and Ryuichi Kiyonari and Takumi Takahashi, not Yukio Takahashi we know from Moto2, they won on the Musashi Arte Hark Pro Honda. Second was Shinichi Ito and Makoto Tamada, names we both know, aboard the Keihin Kahara Honda. And third was the FCC TSR Racing Honda, ridden by Johnny Ray and Kosuke Akiyoshi, who had a crash 2 hours into the race, after which they were four laps down and in 42nd place. And for the next 4 hours, they consistently lapped 2 to 3 seconds a lap faster than the leaders, which is phenomenal, mm-hmm. and came third. I mean, that's just crazy.
What's kind of cool about that is Kiyonari, who won that race, is going to be wild carding this coming weekend at Silverstone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that's going to be him and Josh Brooks are both wild carding. Tommy Hill, I believe, had hoped to, but I don't think Suzuki had the budget for it. So, but yeah, and Keo's funny. He appears to be, even though he's not leading, but he appears to be bigger than BSB. But when he went to World Superbikes, it just didn't really happen. So,
yeah, I think that third Tenkata effort probably wasn't quite as well financed as the main team.
No.
Yeah. Although he did have that one brilliant round at Donington Park in the wet. You remember that?
Oh, we were there, and I've never seen a bike less straight than any part. He was just sideways everywhere.
Absolutely.
I mean, he crashed in race one, but in race two, it was absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, he can do it, and he had that incredible race at Monza, wasn't it, where three bikes finished within 900ths of a second of each other or something, and I think he came third, but he'd been up there punching his weight with Norihaga, and I can't remember who else was in that three-horse race.
Yeah, but very, very cool. Very, very cool.
Fantastic.
You know what? Why don't I just chat with you for a few minutes, since I do...
Yeah, why not?
Do have you on the line. I was at Laguna Seca for the whole weekend. Actually, 6 days. Poof. Long, long weekend full of good time.
Yep.
Did you catch any of the GP this weekend?
I didn't catch much of it at all. I mean, I know what's happened, and dead pleased and surprised with Rossi with his rostrum. And do you know what? The whole Rossi thing is kind of shook me a bit, really. You know, we were in the Isle of Man doing the TT coverage when he broke his leg.
Right.
And it was a bad break, all compound, lots of sort of, you know, not just a simple kind of cracked ankle. And I got chatting with Steve Parrish, who does the BBC coverage for the MotoGP.
Sure.
And we had the same thought at the same time. You know, I thought this, at his stage in his career, this could end Rossi this. You know, this could make him think, you know what, I'm not sure if I want to do this anymore. And it's been completely, I've been totally surprised and pleased that it's been completely the opposite. He's got better quicker than anybody I've ever known from a compound tib-fib. And he still wants to do it, which's been a shock to me, but, you know, just brilliant.
It's kind of amazing how he's managed to go through his whole career up to this point with really never any major injuries. And I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, I wonder if he can bounce back from this, and I wonder if it would be, you know, something that really might hold him back and make him rethink. But then you look at it now with such a short recovery period, and it's like, damn, maybe he is the greatest of all time.
Yeah, no, there's no way of working that out, but you start to think that it's things like this that, you know, the results are one thing and the world championships are one thing, but, you know, when you get a defining kind of, you know, bouncing back from the broken leg and all, it takes something like that to make you think, yeah, maybe he is, maybe, you know, like the Hailwood. Mm-hmm. Hailwood was one of the best anyway. But then when he came back and still could win after 11 years out of the sport, that was his kind of defining thing that set him apart. Maybe this is going to be Rossi's thing that does it for him. But it is amazing. I mean, I've had dib fib wrong, and it wasn't good. And I don't know what I was doing after sort of, I don't know how many days it is, but was it 52 days he was back in the saddle?
Yeah. Just astounding, frankly. And it's kind of weird in a way because, you know, they're going to be heading off for a while to Brno. And with the whole silly season crap that's going on with him perhaps going to Ducati, and I've heard...
Yeah.
And I've heard rumors that he may not be allowed to actually run at Brno at the test because they might have a 2011 M1 out there. The whole thing's just kind of weird in a way.
It has gone a bit weird, and in fact, this has been the story of the week over here in the sort of trade is exactly that, the fact that he's not going to be, Yamaha are not going to allow him to test the 2011 bike, so it is dead weird. I mean, it's so weird. But it's always been this way that, I mean, people turn so quick and teams turn quick. You know, when he left Honda, it's a weird thing, you know, and they obviously don't want to give any of their kind of secrets and updates and all the rest of the way to him if he's going to go somewhere else. I mean, it is weird, but that is the big talking point this week over here.
It really makes you wonder, too, if Jerry is actually going to follow him along because there are so many rumors going around right now, and frankly, after a while, you get just kind of tired and a little bit dizzy, but I've heard stuff like he may go to Honda, you know. Talk about letting a vast range of knowledge out of your hands.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that we've heard that one as well, but that's not as strong a rumor as the Ducati thing. And to be honest, the Ducati move would, in a way, it'd make sense.
Sure.
Italian guy, Italian bike, and it'd round the whole sort of career off in a lot of ways. You know,
I'm trying to think back, and I don't think there's ever been anybody that's won the Premier Championship on three different models.
I don't think there has. I think, what did Lawson do? Well, Lawson won Yamaha, won Honda, and had a couple of race wins on Kojima. That was about the sort of best before now.
Absolutely fascinating. Are you doing Silverstone this weekend?
Yep, I'll be down there tomorrow night. Looking forward to it. Lots of Brits in there, lots of interest. You know, it's been building and the sort of pressure cooker style for a couple of weeks now. I chat with Leon Haslam quite a lot. He's typically not feeling the pressure, but as well as that, he knows he's got to get going, otherwise the championship's gone. You know, he's fully aware how strong BRG is. But there's, apart from the championship, there's lots at stake for the Brits. You know, there's people, underachievers, if you like, which I'm sure that Tolson chatting with him, although he won't say so, he's got a point to prove. Cal's desperate for a race result instead of just pole positions. There's Shaky Byrne, you get the impression he's racing for his sort of ride. And it's all, you know, there's a lot going on there.
You know, I'd kind of have to rate Keogh, too, as a dark horse on the HM Plant bike because he goes well there. I mean, well...
The thing is, what's changed him, the track's completely, completely different to what anybody's ever raced. I mean, one or two of the corners are the same, but essentially it's completely different. And a lot of people are looking forward to it because of that, you know, because it is a level playing field, same for everybody. Nobody's ridden the place before. There's been a couple of laps out on track days in flipping, you know, disguised and having a run around. I know that for a fact. But lots of people are looking forward to it for lots of reasons. But Keogh, he likes Silverstone, but he'll be totally different to what he's done. But you are dead right. The man's back on form. Suzuka 8 hour, and he's kicking ass in Britain as well.
What do you think of? We've got some great wild cards in Supersport too. A bunch of Brit boys.
Yeah, and that's the thing. As far as Britain goes, it's British interest. It's just like the good old days. You know, good wild cards and British runners capable of running right at the front, which, you know, we didn't have that for a long time. Now we have, and it's really good.
Okay, and you partnering up with your regular crew, Jack and Tony, I'm assuming?
Yeah, Jack, Tony, me and Jack in the booth, obviously. Tony running the show, and I believe he's got Mr. Fogarty in with him in the studio. That'll be good. He's always got an opinion, either whether it's right or wrong. He's always got an opinion.
Yeah, and so, it should be one hell of a weekend. Boy, I tell you, these back-to-back race weekends, for me at least, as far as not only talking about it but enjoying it, can get pretty exhausting after a while, can't they?
Yeah, and it's the same for us. You know, it's the British Championship. It's been pretty full on for the last few weeks for me and Jack, and you become not blasé to it, but you certainly become kind of used to it. You know, everybody sees the same people every weekend, and you know what everybody's doing. You know the gossip. You know who's doing what. But it's good for us to get stuck into a good World Championship at home again, and you know, we've been sort of lacking any major gossip and getting in amongst it in World Superbike for a while now, so we're quite looking forward to it, me and Jack.
Yeah, that should be fun. Well, listen, we'll try and get the stuff with Carl rescheduled.
Just let me know.
Okay, and would you mind if I gave your email address or phone number to my co-host to set up the fly down? I can give you...
No.
Let me give you the name of the airstrip, because he gave it to me. Hang on for just a moment here.
This will be it won't be a military base. This will be a civilian airport, won't it?
It is, let me see here. Welshpool Airfield?
Oh, I know Welshpool really well.
Okay.
Welshpool's a really fun, I've been in before. It's a funny place, right in the middle of Wales. But okay. Right in that mountains, they've got some quite tall mountains. Well, not compared to what you've got in the States, but compared to, you know, what we've got here, there's some quite tall mountains, and Welshpool nestles right in the valley that runs, a dead straight valley that runs down between the mountains. So it's nice, yeah. Yeah, certainly, pass on my details.
Okay, excellent.
All right, Jim.
Cheers, and enjoy your weekend. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, man.
All right, cheers, James.
You've got some. Now, you've got some entertaining speculation. I'm going to let you run with this, and not my foot in it.
Well, I don't know how many people are aware of what happened in the German Formula One race this weekend, but Felipe Massa was leading, and a year almost to the day after he nearly died in an accident, and Fernando Alonso was second. Both Ferrari drivers. Alonso is the only one with a mathematical possibility of catching Hamilton, Webber, and Button, who are all ahead of him, for the Drivers' Championship. And Felipe Massa's Rob Smedley, his race engineer, came on the radio, because, of course, they're allowed to have pit-to-car radios, and said, Felipe, Fernando is quicker than you. Do you understand this message? And you hear this sort of crackling answer. And half a lap later, Massa, on a straight, clearly backs off, lets Alonso pass. Now, Formula One have banned team orders.
Mm-hmm.
Ferrari have blatantly, absolutely, every single person who saw that, and I was reluctantly watching it at work, knows exactly what happened. And afterwards, Rob Smedley then says to him, good lad, stick with him. Sorry. I mean, it's so obvious what's happened there. The result of it, though, which was I happened to hear on the radio with a couple of ex-racing drivers who were very up with what's going on there, Martin Brundle and John Watson, namely, have said that hammers the final nail in the coffin of Ferrari's third car ambitions. And they didn't mention Rossi by name, but we all know this rumour that Ferrari has said if we get the third car, it's got Valentino's name on it. And they've said the other teams will absolutely not allow Ferrari to run potentially a third blocking car,
but
because they've demonstrated quite clearly their entirely Machiavellian approach to racecraft.
I would have to think, though, that we're actually stepping even farther out on the rumor diving board, but with Rust in theory, and I heard a few more things this weekend. In fact, I need to talk to you after this call because I have some things I can tell you.
Lovely.
I'll cut that. is that with his potential departure to Ducati, his mind is very, very clearly focused on what he is doing on that side. And he's probably got F1 out of his mind at this point, really.
Yeah. I think that's probably very true. I mean, the next bit was, could it be that he'll move to Ducati GP with the option of moving to Ducati World Superbikes? Because he has said he enjoyed riding the World Superbike. he was instantly on podium pace, or pretty much by the end of the weekend at Misano, certainly he was at Bernau, he was at podium pace. And he, of course, could become the only person ever to win both championships. And he has said there is clearly a difference in rider level, and MotoGP is where the best riders are or need to be. But he did seem to enjoy it. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that we will know in the fullness of time.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he even got a chance to actually have the engineers twiddle the knobs on the thing, which is something that never happens with a test rider from another series. They never actually make adjustments to the bike. And you and I, and I think Jules and I, were talking about how they sort of got a free development ride out of Valle to get dial some more stuff into the bike for both Cal and JT. So we'll have to see how that goes, you know, comes
up. Particularly this weekend, yeah. More speculation that the Flamini brothers are closely monitoring the development of the 2012 MotoGP regulations with a view to deploying their army of lawyers. And I'm thinking, well, hang on. If Dorna say, okay, the claiming rule teams are allowed to deploy production-based engines and prototype chassis, I think if World Superbike were to say, right, no, we're not having this, surely their argument is, well, that's exactly what Moto2 is, plus it's a control engine, and you haven't done anything about that. So I'm not sure that all this business that Flamini brothers are going to get stuck into MotoGP saying you're not allowed to do this has got any legs at all. Sure, if someone pitches up in a BMW S1000RR, you know, with taping up the lights and the mirrors and says, I want to race MotoGP, they've got a point. But if it's a prototype chassis with a developed from a production engine, I think Dorna will probably get away with it, but we'll see.
I do too. And I think it's probably healthy for both series, to be honest. They're interlocked in a very bizarre sort of way. There's always speculation about people going in one direction or another, and it is part of the rising talent pool. And I don't even think there's any point to take legal action. I mean, they can both exist. There's place for both of them. So let's just see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think World Superbike's big selling point is you can watch a Fireblade race on Sunday and go out and buy one on Monday. You know, okay, it's not exactly going to be the same, but it is recognizably, you know, a Fireblade, whereas a RCV 12 is not, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, and speaking of engines.
Yeah.
Suzuki.
Yeah, so we all know about what we've been hearing lately about Suzuki, and you know, apparently Ducati and some others through the MSMA decided that it was quite possible, and it's not a done deal yet, and you'll get it straight from the horse's mouth shortly. They wanted to get some additional engines at the end of the year because they basically are in trouble. And Alessandro, read that part, because that part cracked me up.
Well, Suzuki are likely to get extra engines, apparently proposed by Ducati at the MSMA meeting, and asked if he would extend the offer to other teams. Ducati project leader Alessandro Cicognani, I don't know how to pronounce that, laughed. I don't think so. So they're pretty happy for Suzuki to get extra engines because they're not threatening at the top. But I suspect if Yamaha said, yeah, Jorge's actually used his full entitlement, do you mind if we give him an extra engine? I suspect Ducati and Honda are going to go,
absolutely.
But as you said, I think one of the most amenable and open people you see interviewed in the paddock is Paul Denning, and you've got him.
You want to hear?
Yeah, go on.
Oh, let's roll it. Sorry. Just want to talk to you a little bit about last week. First off, about Bautista not being allowed back out.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that at this point with some time to think about it?
Probably no different than at the time, really, which is that the regulation is absolutely as it is, and there is very good reason for it, because clearly a rider that's had a crash, caused a red flag, in a normal situation wouldn't be able to get up and ride again, so why should they be able to take the restart? They may even get an advantage in a championship. You imagine there's two guys fighting for a championship and someone. So the reason for the regulation is clear and understandable. The thing that sort of clouds it at the moment is the fact there are too few bikes on the grid to make it sensible to have bikes sat in the pit. And the fact that sort of when riders who are completely unconnected are caught up in that accident means that it feels a touch unfair. But the problem is, if you write a regulation whereby, for example, the race director has the right at his discretion to allow certain riders to restart, in a case like Sachsenring it would make complete sense and it would be obvious. But you can imagine a situation where there's a red flag after two riders fighting have touched each other's, whose fault was it? And so probably it's difficult and probably it'll stay like it is.
Was there a bit of anger? Do you think the marshals were paying too much attention to the track and not enough to bring the bikes back?
No, the rider has to be able to bring the bike back under his own steam.
Okay.
And I mean, in our case, there's nothing left of the front wheel, front discs. Sure. We'd have had to ride it on the bottom of the fork, so it wasn't going to happen.
Okay. The purported rumor, which is kind of loud, which that you guys might get some additional engines at the end of the year, is that taking form, do you think? Or
we're aware that there are discussions ongoing and that there's been a proposal by the MSMA, not specifically on Suzuki's behalf, but that manufacturer of certain conditions should be allowed additional engines, and I think it's something that the manufacturers are looking at really with an eye to support the sport more than anything else, and to try to avoid what you could call unnecessary penalties or unnecessary corporate embarrassment almost.
Sure.
And to keep everybody involved and encourage additional participation. So I think there is a change to the regulation being discussed to involve both new manufacturers coming in and existing manufacturers that haven't achieved a certain level of success in the last year or two. So when that becomes a regulation or not, it can be discussed more fully, but there are discussions ongoing, yes.
If you look back in retrospect at the 6-4-18 rule, Do you remember if you saw it as tenable or you were kind of shaking your head going, well, good luck for us?
No, Suzuki pushed for some flexibility, a few more, because the difference in cost to run 8 or 6 is not really so much. However, you have to also consider manufacturers running 6 bikes. It is obviously a big difference.
Sure.
So the balance is the balance. We pushed for either some flexibility in additional engines or to be able to have 6 engines but maybe strip and rebuild 2 in a year, because you can imagine the internal parts you change, pistons, crank or whatever, cost less than a business class flight back to Australia. So it's kind of, that would have been a practical solution but wasn't supported. So Suzuki did want a bit more flexibility. In the end, it is how it is, and perhaps the flexibility would have been better then than now, but hey, that's how things work sometimes.
Hindsight is 2020.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Cheers. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, no, very welcome.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much.
What do you think? Oh, wait, you haven't heard it yet. Never mind.
from what I have seen of Paul Denning's interviews, I'm sure that was very revealing and probably quite humorous. He certainly seems to be someone who can ride the storm of disappointment and just come back fighting, and long may that last.
And a gentleman that apparently has an awful lot of patience, if you think about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, linking in, a nice segue into our next item, is that it's reported that Paul Denning's been speaking to Randy Depugne, or certainly Randy's representatives, about the possibility of him going to Suzuki next season. I think it's a fairly open secret that Loris Caparossi's off to Pramac Ducati to replace Mika Kallio. But Lucio Ciccanello, hoping that Randy's going to stay with him. He is expected to be back for the Brno race. Although he has the same headline injury as Valentino, a break of the tib and fib, I believe Randy's had straight single fractures. And, the breaking of a long bone is probably the easiest one to deal with, because you pin above and below and there's a bit of pain, but off you go. And it is worth mentioning, Matt Roberts tweeted a cracking description of his riding style, and he said he's like a pit bull on wet lino. Now, I hope lino's not a UK-only trade name.
It is a bit, for the other half of the people that listen to the show, they're American-based or whatever. He's speaking of linoleum, the kind of hard plastic stuff that, and anybody can actually picture that.
Yeah.
Absolutely slippery. So
crazy Cyber's Frenchman. We love him and just want to see him back and carrying on the amazing work he's been doing. It really is good fun to see that.
And in that same vein, I did have a talk with Lucio while I was at Laguna Seca, and we discussed that amongst other things. So we'll listen to that now.
Brilliant.
Okay, Jim Race here for MotoGP OD. It is Friday afternoon after FP1. I'm here with Lucio Cecchino face-to-face instead of over Skype or some silly technology. You've done with FP1. You've had Roger out there. Obviously, the temporary loss of Randy is a big pain for the team. How did you come to the decision? Obviously, there may be a bit of a marketing issue, but how did you come to the decision to bring Roger in for the temporary work here, or are you thinking of carrying him forward?
Well, after what happened last Sunday in Germany, we had to face a very hard reality, and then we had to take a very quick decision. Because, of course, we had just a few hours before to take the decision. Okay, does we ship all the material, we send all the material to Laguna Seca, or we stay home? Then, in general, we think that we want to continue to show our professionalism. We want to continue to show our commitment in doing our job, you know. Of course, we didn't expect to face a such difficult situation, but then immediately we decide, okay, it's not really a marketing issue, because contractually we can even stop for a couple of races, you know, with the FIM, but also with our sponsor. Contractually, you know, we always leave this door open, but because we are professional, we are serious, I believe that we needed to go on, even if Randy were not there, and to continue to do our job and to continue to do our best. We decided to very quick to contact Roger, because we just thought the best solution for Laguna Seca is an American rider who knows already the track, and then an available American rider, the quickest person we know, was Roger Lee.
There was one thing that came to mind, and it's actually been asked by a lot of people, and I guess I'm going to ask you a hard question, a difficult question. Did Tony Elias perhaps come to mind, or is there some rivalry between you and Grassini?
No, we didn't contact Tony Elias, because we believe that Tony Elias is a Honda Grassini official rider for Moto2. He's fighting for the championship, so we believe that was professional to not disturb and to not contact Tony.
Sure, okay, and I can totally understand it, especially in the middle of silly season, if you will. The momentum that you had going up to there, and it's clear that Randy is having one of his best years ever, or up to that point, and it was amazing what happened on Saturday, and his comeback and actually making it through warm-up and being able to start the race, because there were many of us, not only fans, but journalists, that thought after his crash on Saturday that he wasn't going to be able to continue, and he was able to continue, and then what happened was just, I don't know how to put it into words. It was not something clearly that you would have wanted to see happen in a very unfortunate circumstance.
In somehow, we believe that we just had very bad luck, because the Reddy crash on Saturday was an unexpected crash, and was not due to his fault. And the crash on Sunday, in reality, was due because he lost the feet, his right foot from the bike, because he couldn't press enough, because he had pain. And then losing his foot, he lost the control of the bike, and then he crashed. And then again, we were really unlucky, because suddenly he stayed in the middle of the track, and then another rider crashed against his left leg. So now he has both tibia injured, you know.
Yeah.
One tibia is with a small injury, very, very small injury, and another tibia with a, you know, big operation. And but he's strong, he's mentally is very hard, so I believe that he will come back soon.
And I would not disagree with you. I think that Randy is probably one of those people that are able to come back very quickly from injury, and there's no doubt that he has a spirit to come back quickly. And do you really think he can make it back in 5 weeks, or are you looking forward to having him back that quickly?
Well, the reality is that he want to race, want to try to race in Brno. Perhaps it's too early, but we just discussed with Dr. Costa from the mobile clinic, and we decide that we are going to try to let him ride in Brno, if everything will be fine. Just a couple of days before, we will take the final decision. Yes, but at this moment, his fracture will be not restabilized in that period. But because he has a long pin inside,
right,
mechanically he will be able to do. In just mechanically, he will not have any risk to make a bigger damage in his leg. The only problem is that he has to face pain, for sure, because you know, all the bone are still suffering. Yeah.
I mean, Dr. Costa is very good at getting a rider out, even if it's not the best idea. And there is a trade-off between getting an injection for pain and having numbness, where you cannot feel, you know, your wrist or your leg or whatever, in order to operate the motorcycle. I do think he'll come back quickly. On another subject, and best for Randy, and please tell him that, you know, MotoGPOD says hello. You're running the Gibby livery this weekend?
Yeah.
Is that for the whole weekend?
Yeah.
Okay. because Americans, many Americans were wondering if you would give Roger Lee Hayden a Playboy livery.
No, we have a deal with Playboy Italy, and then we also with the head of Playboy Europe, then we just have Playboy in some European Grand Prix, and here in USA we contacted Playboy US, but for some reason they have some kind of exclusivity with NASCAR, so they said that for motorsport they are not able to support all the motorsport discipline. In any case, we are proud and happy to have GV as a title sponsor.
Absolutely. Interestingly, HRC's plans for a three-rider super team may have hit the buffers, because Red Bull, whilst they're still negotiating, it would appear that either there's less money on offer or they just can't come to an agreement, and that might go down the pan. Everyone seems to be presuming, all the commentators, that it's Dovizioso who will be the loser. And yet his contract, supposedly, says that if he finishes in the top five, then he gets a factory ride for 2011. So if they demote him to Gresini, albeit with full factory support, just like Simoncelli, does that count? Or, and this is my conspiracy theory firing up, or will we see his bikes, thinking of Machiavellian approaches to racing, if there is a Ferrari in MotoGP, it's got to be HRC, isn't it?
Oh, no.
will Will we see Dovey's bike suspiciously start to become a bit slower compared to everyone else's, particularly Danny's? I don't know. I mean, I'd certainly hope not. But if I was Dovey, I'd feel a bit miffed if I come... I mean, he's third at the moment.
I know.
So if he finishes third and they're saying, sorry, no, you're out and Stoner's in, I can understand he might feel a bit disgruntled.
I bet. Well, there's not a whole lot of places to land, frankly. So,
and that's the problem with the shrinking grid. The shrinking grid means, you know, yeah, people are getting squeezed out.
Sure. We'll really have to see. There was a bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? There was a bit of hope that people that I was talking to off the record in the GP paddock were looking at 2011 as kind of a resurgent year. It seems like the manufacturers themselves are actually starting to feel a little better, even though bike sales haven't picked up yet to the extent they would at this point. But it looks like money may actually come back to the teams in anticipation of a resurgence in that. So,
yeah,
we'll have to see.
I like home, that's for sure. I mean, I definitely get to see some places around the world that's pretty cool, but home ain't bad. No, I would say Indy's more my home GP now. I mean, I drive there, it's 3 hours away. This place is still pretty special, but I consider Indy home. We got a light crew this weekend, just my mom, dad, my sisters, my brothers, and a couple OGs from back home, but most of them's waiting for Indy. A couple last, once Raj found out he was riding, tipped the scale, a few people got a late ticket, but quick. I mean, Casey's always so fast here. I mean, even here on the Honda, maybe was the most I ever been impressed, you know, never been here, and was fastest about 10 minutes into the first session, so. But that's good for me that he's fast, because, you know, shows what the bike can do, and they can, the engineers can talk and stuff, so in some ways it's to my advantage. The gearbox, we got to change the gearbox a little bit. Normally, with the new engines this year, we pretty well had it calculated about, you know, really close, but today we missed it a little bit. So hopefully we can change it around. This is a tough place for transmissions because there's so much second, third gear. So we'll definitely change that. And actually the bike wasn't too bad, you know. It's relatively close out of the gate. You know, I know seventh ain't where we wanted to be, but we're not going to go home. So some of the races this year where I've been fast on Friday hasn't been good, you know, assing, and last week I was third on Friday and hadn't went forward. So hopefully tomorrow we can do a big step. But tires, absolutely.
Yeah.
Always tires. Never rider.
But, I mean, you picked it up.
No, it wasn't tires. I mean, everybody's running the same tires, so it's kind of hard to use that one. We have to come up with no excuses.
But, I mean, you picked it up towards the end.
No, we changed a bit the fork spring and just getting a little bit better, you know, feeling, you know, pushing harder. Yeah.
Did that make any difference at all?
You know, I didn't compare it. I only rode one bike, so I can't really say. I had a lot of wheelie. I know that's one play. This track, we have probably the shortest gearing we have all year, and, I mean, it wants to wheelie everywhere. I mean, the straightaway in the back is going up to the corkscrews, like, you know, you hardly go full throttle there.
And what about over the crest? Do you remember what you say you take that one, turn one, sixth gear?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you pinned?
No, I'm not. Nah, I mean, I used to be pinned on a 600, but, I mean, this weekend or just in general? Well, not a lot. I mean, setting-wise is... You know, the chassis is really no difference. I mean, the engine is different. And around here is not as big a difference as we thought it might be. But, yeah, we're pretty much on the same thing. I mean, Ducati's not a big factor. They don't just bang out. Once the season starts, we really don't change. I mean, we got different fairing and a couple little things. But it's basically the same bike we started the season with. And I think in some ways that's, you know... We know that going in, so we don't even lose time thinking about, we need this upgrade, we need that. Just, you know, obviously the electronics are probably the main thing, but
you know, just change setup and things like that, not radically different parts.
Yeah, we had to work at it. I mean, it's always a compromise. Sometimes you make it a little better here.
But speaking of that, I'm just going to jump around the order a little bit here, just to mention, talking about an expanding grid, hopefully. And Ducati have confirmed they're going to field a sixth bike and rider in 2011 with Carol Abraham, the selected rider who apparently impressed in a recent test on the GP10. I suspect just as large, if not a larger factor in this, is the fact that he's been heavily financed by his father, who owns Brno Circuit. So obviously not from a poor family. Okay, he's not managed to get on the podium in 87 GP starts. But, you know, he's a reasonably good rider. It'd be interesting to see how he does. But it's sure to be a relief to Dorna, because that immediately stretches the grid to 18, 12 of which will be Hondas and Ducatis. If we do get the seventh Honda, the three-man HRC team, that's 19. And we're getting a lot closer to, I think it was Hervé Poncharal who said, 22 is the aim for 2012. And if you've got 22, you don't mind someone taking 3 weeks out to nurse an injury.
Sure.
When you're at 17, you're at critical mass, you know, as someone said, who I can't remember who it was. But I just hope Carol Abraham doesn't turn out to be a Gabor Talmashi. Lots of money, gets his ride, really can't be competitive.
Your point is very well taken. And I've been wondering lately how I can actually gauge riders that are running in Moto2 as actually being ready to take the step to MotoGP. Because that class is so fluid as far as who's running at the front, with the exception of just a few people, how do you really get a good idea if they're prepared to step onto a bike that is clearly at a much more incredible and intense level? I mean, how do you know?
But, I mean, and the other thing is, this thought's only just come to me, I haven't thought it through, so it's probably complete hoopla, but the two relegated MotoGP riders, Tony Elias, who in MotoGP was fractionally, marginally better in his results over the years than De Angelis. Tony Elias is head and shoulders at the top of that. He's the only rider who's scored in every round. You know, he's won the most races. He's way out the front on the Moto2. Alex De Angelis, with a lot of DNFs, admittedly, isn't anywhere. So it is really difficult to judge. And the talent spotters must have their work cut out.
Sure.
You look at, there are obvious ones, Giannettino Rossi as he came up, Jorge Lorenzo, double 250 world champion, you know, that's the best of that lot. But, you know, the people who can ride in the pack near the front and occasionally win, I sometimes wonder why some get picked up and some don't to move up a level. And I just wonder if someone somewhere sees something and thinks he's adaptable, he could, you know, or he's strong, or whatever it may be. People who know a lot more about it than I do.
Well, I guess there's a secondary question is, there really, at least within GP paddock, there's nowhere up to really go without having any additional teams. I'm certain that when we run into the 2012 rules, you're going to see some guys migrate from Moto2, but I think you're also going to see a whole bunch of them stay, although yep, at least six teams are going to have to go somewhere else with the reduction in the grid sizes. You might see some go to World Supersport or World Superbike.
I was wondering if there will be more cross-pollination from World Supersport to Moto2 and vice versa than you see between World Superbike and MotoGP.
I think a lot of reason that there wasn't, and a lot of people were speculating that, is that, you know, it's a first-year bike. And so everybody's still ironing out the bugs and figuring out how to get the most out of it via aero and whatnot with the control engine. And
yeah,
I think once you start to see clearly leading chassis and engineering combinations, that you're going to start seeing a little bit more movement.
And we may well have people who, on the right package, would have shone and possibly been picked up for MotoGP, who this year are on the wrong package, move to a different Moto2 team, Moto2 team next year, and flourish. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure Tony Lewis is hoping for a move back into MotoGP. Where he'd fit in, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here with Tom Howsworth. God, you know, I've got about a billion questions, but just a general one. It's got to be great to be back in Laguna Seca, isn't it?
It's nice to be back in the United States, actually.
Yeah.
We've been coming up here for years, but we're over in Italy, actually Europe, for 50 days this stint. Yeah, it's really nice to be back home.
When was the last time you got home?
When was, like, just now, Monday?
Well, no, I'm talking about the last time that you were home.
Oh, May 31st was when we flew out, yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it was worse last year, the Superbike. You know, we did 3 months the first time out, but it seemed, I don't know why, it just seemed longer this time. It was only 50 days, only, but...
Well, I mean, okay, so there's no doubt the World Superbike paddock is a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But we're getting to know people here now, so it's, you know, behind the scenes it's starting to loosen up, I guess would be the way to say it.
Becoming more familial.
Definitely getting more familiar, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's focus on this weekend. Here we are at Laguna Seca. There is no doubt that word is that you guys are getting some bits and pieces and a little bit of new kit. Not that you can, well, this won't come out until next week, so if you want to pop something out, you got something special for the weekend?
We got some cool new stickers on our bodywork.
bold new graphics?
Yeah, I think it's a Texas flag, and he's got some new leathers that I think will look pretty sharp. But
I'm going to hurt you for that.
You know, other than that, I've heard a lot of stories like what you just said, and I don't believe that to be super true.
It's the second time today I've tried to pin you down. You've dodged me. Okay, so an 09 chassis. Okay, let's go back to basics. 09 chassis, 010 engine, with, you know, the restrictions that we've had. Are these new stickers any faster? Do they have like ripples like a golf ball?
No, I mean they're just a Texas flag, and you know, it's going to come out on Sunday, and that's about it. No, really, I mean, a lot of people think we got all these new parts, and it's just not structured that way. So we really...
This is actually better than truth, you know?
There really isn't... we don't have a silver bullet for here. No, we're just, you know, I'm not sure where Ben's goals are, but, you know, I'm realistically hoping we can get somewhere between third and sixth. I mean, these men are fast, and he knows the track, but we still got to set the bike up, and he does his job riding it, and, you know, we'll see where we land. But, no, there's no – you're not going to see, you know, he's not going to be 2 seconds faster than he normally is this weekend.
Well, no doubt, and that's a totally unrealistic.
Yeah, point. Well, yeah. Even – it's – yeah, there's – No, we haven't put together a new. It's not like that.
For the listeners that are listening to this, Tom's got a big old smile.
I just think it's funny. Listen, I've been hearing it for a couple of weeks. All this new stuff we've gotten, and we're like, where is it?
Well, okay. Maybe it'll be like a, you know, Christmas. You know,
show up Sunday. Yeah.
Well, no, hopefully not show up Sunday.
Well, we got the bikes finished today, so. Yeah. I mean, the guys are just buttoning them up right now. So, yeah, really, there's not this, like, what'd you say, kids, we got what we got is what it is.
All right.
I mean, seriously, I know you think I'm bullshitting you, but.
All right, so, you know, Frank, you kind of left me in the dry, man. obviously, new livery, and we know that's coming.
That's the cool colors, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something that we do every year here. There's no doubt that Yamaha puts forward a very special effort for here.
Yeah. They sponsor the event, yeah.
Yeah, really, and basically get a whole, you know, a lot of promotion from it. I'm not going to get anything out of you. I don't even know what I'm going to ask.
Give it a shot.
Has Ben lost weight since the last race?
Actually, he has. He has.
Yeah?
He's
down to Danny Pedrosa weight.
Well, no. That's really tiny. But, no, he has lost some weight. That bicycling thing, I don't know how he does that so much. But he really put some time into that. And he's down. I don't know what he's down to. He does all this... He's in Europe for 3 weeks, and he's into the KG thing, so I don't know, 69, 70, I don't know. You'll have to ask him, but he has lost a little bit of weight.
You know, I'm going to come talk to you on Sunday after the podium ceremony. I'm going to say,
motherfucker.
I hope we're on it, you know, I really do. But it's, I don't know if you guys understand how fast these men are. I mean, Jorge, Pedrosa, Casey, Rossi, I mean, Divioso, these are fast, fast men. And Ben's fast, but I mean, we got to be 100% all the time. And it's, you know, to get up, what he did at Silverstone was really, really amazing. And it's tough. It's, and yeah, believe me, we don't have the silver bullet that a lot of people think we have for here. So,
well, a little brass bullet would be kind of nice.
Well, yeah, that's the Texas flag on the side.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it actually might slow the bike down because it's a sticker over the
the silver bullet.
Yeah, over the other bodywork. So,
all right, brother.
Now, the big news this week in MCN, the big story is that Rossi has been banned by Yamaha from the Brno test because they're going to be testing the 2011 prototype. However, I would apply a sprinkling of caution to that because the quote they've got from Lynn Jarvis is, it is pretty obvious if, sorry, I'll start that again. It's pretty obvious if there is at any stage a test of a 2011 prototype, it will be with a rider that will be with us in 2011. End quote.
Mm-hmm.
He does not say at any stage, in quote marks, Valentino Rossi is not going to be at that test. So whether MCN know that or they're speculating, I don't know. But of course, Lorenzo still hasn't signed, or if he has, it's not been announced. So if he does the test and Rossi doesn't, irrespective of what's being announced officially, I think it'd be fairly clear that Jorge's staying and Valentino's going, which everybody seems to be taking as a done deal. And of course, the test happens after the race. So,
right,
if the announcement's made at the race, which everyone seems to be saying it will be, it won't be any surprise.
It's really funny when you're talking to these folks, because what people don't or won't say is nearly as important as what they actually do say.
Yeah. And following that one up, Jerry Burgess has allegedly been approached by HRC to join them for 2011, possibly to crew chief for Casey Stoner, and Jerry has done that classic Jerry Burgess sort of denial, but what he actually said is, I guess I'm the everywhere man at the moment, there has been no offer from Honda. Discussions are one thing, but offers are another. So you think, well, obviously you've been talking to them, you know, I still think he'll move to Rossi with Rossi to Ducati, but if there's ever been fractures in their relationship showing, it possibly has been this season. With Jerry saying, well, his shoulder's hurting him, Rossi saying, no, we got the setup wrong. You know, I can't see it. And if he doesn't go with him, looking at, I think the timing of Rossi's move is it gives him, next year will be getting used to the team, the environment, and a year of developing the 1,000cc for 2012 when everyone starts with a blank sheet.
That's true. That is true. You know, I still think that Burgess and Rossi are going to stick together. It's kind of an epic combination. The real question is, Jerry's kind of been talking about retiring for a couple of years now. He's no spring chicken, but I think he would also like to be able to get a championship on yet another manufacturer's bike. It's as important, yeah. I think it's as important to him as it is to Valley. You know, we're just going to have to wait. Yeah. It'll start settling down after a bit.
But it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, he is going to be as famous, probably, as all but two or three of the top riders ever. You know, people will talk about Jerry Burgess as the kingmaker.
Indeed. Yeah, they will. They will. No doubt. I mean, the list of riders is incredible. Just one last bit of news that kind of cracked me up. Danny Pedrosa flew straight from San Francisco down to Jakarta, Indonesia, to teach at a Honda racing school down there. The kids are like 11 through 15 years old, something like that. And there was one quote out of there that just made me laugh. I'm just going to say it and kind of leave it out there. Maybe it's my twisted sense of humor. Danny said he has always been connected with and got on well with children. I don't know why, but I always feel very comfortable with them.
Yeah, I know. No comment.
Yeah, I'll leave that one right there. But good for him. He went down and did a bunch of training, did a bunch of laps on, I guess, some 110 or 150cc bike around the Sentul kart track. And always good to do something like that. And that's really common for Honda. They are very importantly involved in their promotional opportunities, but also with providing a stable, if you will, of up-and-coming kids. And Ueda is actually teaching that school. And he was a 125 Grand Prix champ or 250, I can't remember, some time back.
Right.
We had a race this weekend, didn't we?
We certainly did. Yeah, after recent Laguna Seca races, possibly slightly disappointing.
Oh, but, no, we've had some good ones.
Oh, no, we've had some fantastic ones. But, I mean, for this year didn't quite live up to previous years in that sense. Or it didn't at the front, although there were some interesting talking points. Should we run through the finishing order and then...
Sure, that sounds good. Go ahead.
So, winning was Jorge Lorenzo again. Casey, 3.5 seconds behind in second place. And Valentino Rossi, what was it, 50 days after he broke his leg, although he was 10 seconds behind Casey, came in third.
Back on the box.
Absolutely. Just less than a second ahead of Dovi, with Nicky in fifth, Ben Spies sixth, Colin Edwards seventh, making a triumvirate of Americans. Marco Melangi eighth, Mika Kallio 9th, Loris Caparossi 10th, Roger Lee Hayden in 11th, just pipping Alex De Angelis, who was the last finisher, in 12th, because Aleth Espargaro crashed again, Marco Simoncelli crashed, Danny Pedrosa crashed whilst in the lead, and we'll talk about that shortly, Hector Barbera and Alvaro Bautista also both went out. It was interesting. Obviously, I was watching on television, saw the start. Lorenzo had a flyer off the start and then got eaten around turn one. He said he backed off the throttle slightly too much. And it's not much of a turn, is it? It's more a gentle change of direction. But then he carved through. It's funny because Sharon's not his hugest fan, being a Rossi fan, and being rather fond of Ben Spies as well. And she was jumping up and going, yeah, Ben's in front of Hoy. And I sat there going, no, he's not now. And she's still dancing around, laughing and going, ah, ha, 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 your boy's been overtaken. And I said, no, no, he's got back. And she didn't hear me. Looked around and went, what happened? I said, I've been trying to tell you for that 5 minutes. He got back in front, which was quite funny. Jorge carved through, was closing down on Casey, who made a small mistake, ran a bit wide. And Jorge was through. And then he was closing down Danny. And I did think, now, this could be Jerez, but for much, much longer. And unfortunately, he just got within a second. He wasn't closing fast, but he was steadily closing on Danny, and Danny lost the front. Trying to think where it was now.
Turn five.
That was a meat grinder of a corner over the weekend, wasn't it?
It was, and it always has been. I mean, you're coming into it with a very good clip. It is a fairly cambered turn with pretty smooth pavement and whatnot, but the problem is that you have to carry corner speed through there, because essentially as soon as you get through the turn, you're heading up.
You're going up the hill. Yeah.
And without carrying corner speed through there, you're going to get chewed up and spat out by people who are going to be passing you. And the last thing you want is somebody passing you right before you go into six, because there aren't many lines through there. There is essentially
no.
And I'd much rather crash at five than crash at six at this point. So, yeah.
And it became, I mean, at the front, that was it. Stoner was never able to close down Lorenzo, so it was a runaway win again. However, we did see developing behind Dovi, then Rossi, then Hayden, then Spies. And Ben Spies got past Nicky, and the two of them appeared to be closing with Rossi, as Dovi appeared to be pulling a bit of a lead out. And I thought, now, this could be interesting. And then Ben ran really wide, and it was on at 10 o'clock in the evening, the live race here. I was working the next day, so we watched it on BBC. I haven't watched it back on Eurosport yet, and I just find their commentary so annoying. Half a lap And we're screaming at the telly, where is Ben? Why can't we see Ben?
Yeah.
In the distance behind Nicky, you can see a dark bike and rider. Couldn't see who it was. And then eventually go, oh no, Ben Spees isn't there. What's happened? I'm thinking, you're the commentators. You've got all this information in front of you. You've got all these screens. Ugh. But turns out he ran wide and he had a problem with his visor. His visor kept popping open and we did notice his arm going up on, well, there aren't many straights, but down the home straight. And I presumed he was tearing taking a tear off,
yeah.
You know, and is peeling it, off a tear off. But it kept flipping up.
Yeah, his visor would not stay down. Most all helmets have small, or at least in ones that are being used for racing, have these little small tabs or locks that will keep the visor down. Now, we know that those are not infallible because you see crashes all the time where the guy's visor pops open.
Yeah.
It can happen from just about, you know, pretty much anything, but it is relatively uncommon unless the rider's involved in a crash. And certainly absolutely distracting at that rate of speed, and it will get your eyes started watering if you can't keep it down and you can't just keep reaching up. So, yeah, that was a drag. But regardless, it was nice to see at least all four Americans finish the race for me.
Yeah.
Considering the amount of crashes that we had.
And the other thing was Rossi, who just after that, you watched him just... There was some fantastic shots looking back at Nicky from the rear-facing gyroscopic camera, which is just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And Nicky was closing up a lot in the corners, but on the straights getting absolutely dumped. And then he just basically ran away from Nicky and closed down Dovi. Now, I haven't studied it yet, but I'm looking forward to looking at Elliot Bland's graph if he goes back that far in the riders, because I'm not sure if Dovi started to have problems and slowed down, or if Valentino just suddenly, maybe he was conserving his energy and he thought, do you know what, there's 6-7 laps left, I feel great, I'm going to go. But it was as inevitable as watching Ben Spees close him down at Valencia last year. He just ate up the gap, and it wasn't if it's going to happen, it was when, and he dispatched Dovi with, I think the phrase is consummate ease, and was back on the podium on his crutches. Where, of course, if there's one thing that even the biggest detractors of American culture will acknowledge, it's you guys know how to put on a show. And so it was very surprising to see that they played the Italian national anthem when Jorge Lorenzo is demonstrably Spanish. Now, we didn't see this because the BBC... The program started during the warm-up lap, so no preamble, after a three-hour Formula One race. and it finished after a very brief Parc Fermé chat. They said, oh, there you go, and that's the end of that. See you in 3 weeks' time, bye.
Yeah.
And what a rip-off. So I have no idea. Did they stop the Italian national anthem and then get the Spanish one going? Or
they did. It played for about, I don't know, it wasn't very long. It was pretty short, but I wasn't anywhere near the podium, but you could hear it over the public address system, and I just started laughing. And at first, I'm like, "Well, that's not the manufacturer's bike either." And they stopped it and they fired it back up again. But
I think Valentino just went into whoever does that bit of the music and said, "Well, if you play the Italian national anthem, I'll give you my leathers and helmet signed."
May very well have. you know, it was kind of cool. I remember going back in this one area behind the team tents, and they had like five or six Rossi replica R1s that were done really, really well. And on them, all of the fairings were signed, and they had Rossi replica helmets on top of them, and all of those were signed. I have no idea what they did with those over the weekend, but they were nice. And I also popped up to the Repsol hospitality area, where the slightly more ubiquitous Repsol Hondas were lined up, Repsol area, and all of those bikes, the classic Repsol Hondas, were lined up three or four deep, and there were a ton of those up there. But back to the race. Yeah, he tossed his crutches into the crowd too, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, he never ceases to amaze. And I do take note, and for once, with some credibility, or give some credibility to Casey Stoner's comments after Sachsenring, where he said, hey, come on. Yeah, he had a bad injury. He's come back. He's racing with an injury. We've all done it. You know, these guys are a race apart. They are a breed apart. But still, you can't help but be quite impressed. And I do think, despite the 72-point lead, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Jorge Lorenzo for the rest of the season. He will not want Valentino to be able to consistently beat him. You know, if Jorge gets into that, I've got to conserve the lead and race for the championship, not the race win, you know, a la James Tozer in 2007, I don't think he'll want to do that, because if Valentino has the opportunity to say, look, see, if I'd been fit all season, I think he'll want to continue the run he's on.
That is likely true. We should get rolling on this. We're cranking out the minutes here, and we've got a lot of interviews we're going to have this week. You had asked about the safety car. What happened?
Yeah,
the safety car apparently lost its brakes going into turn 11, and turn 11 or 8. It might have been Rainy Corner. From what I understand, the driver was fine, but it was a little bit bizarre seeing a safety car with the front end all crumpled up.
And it's a funny picture.
Yeah, I'd missed it too, but very, very bizarre. As far as we did have support series that were out there, and in fact, one of your most appreciated names, Martin, Skylar Vicroy.
Skylar Vicroy, what? Yeah, friend of the show and now contributor in more ways than one.
Indeed. Skylar sent me a bit after the last AMA round, since this one is concurrent with MotoGP, and I got to chat with him as usual at this race. He sent us a quick summary of the AMA stuff, so we'll go ahead and roll that. We'll be right back.
Hello, MotoGP OD land. This is Skylar Vicroy with your AMA Pro Road Racing Report. Round 7 of the AMA series took place over the U.S. Grand Prix weekend at Laguna Seca. There would only be single races for both classes during this weekend. A couple notes before we start. Ben Bostrom still has a bum thumb. Remember, in qualifying 1 in Mid-Ohio, he actually crashed and tore the ligaments in his thumb. And Miguel Duhamel made his comeback this weekend at Laguna Seca. Let's start with Daytona Sport Bike, shall we? In qualifying, in 10th place was Chris Fillmore. 9th was Michael Beck. 8th, Steve Rapp. 7th, Corey West. 6th, Danny Eslick. 5th, Clinton Seller. 4th, Bobby Fong. 3rd, Martin Cardenas. 2nd, Josh Herron. And taking his 3rd pole of the year, Tommy Aquino. Now let's move on to the race. Bobby Fong got out to an early lead, while Herron, Aquino, Seller, and Eslick all duked it out for a while. Eventually, Herron, Aquino, and Seller would pull away from Eslick. Martin Cardenas had a poor start and needed to catch up for most of the race. Herron, Aquino, and Seller continued to duke it out amongst themselves, and Fong continued to gap them while they were doing this. While they were battling it out, Martin Cardenas sucked it up to the back of that group and ended up passing all of them in one lap. He went from 5th to 2nd in one lap. It was actually pretty amazing to watch some of those passes. Those passes occurred while they were catching up to lap traffic. And speaking of lap traffic, Martin pulled right up to the back of Fong as Fong caught lap traffic in the top of the corkscrew, which is one of the worst places on that track to catch lap traffic. Bobby Fong actually crashed out in turn 2 on the very next lap as Martin was applying the pressure. And once that happened, Cardenas had such a gap on the rest of the field, he just coasted away. Steve Rapp actually came back from who knows where, ended up passing all the Yamahas in the last two laps. Which leads to our final results, with Fernando Amantini in 10th, Michael Beck in 9th, Chris Fillmore in 8th, Corey West in 7th, Josh Herron making his comeback after coming off the track into 6th, Danny Eslick in 5th, Tommy Aquino in 4th, Clinton Seller in 3rd, Steve Rapp in 2nd, and taking his 6th win of the year, Martin Cardenas. So now let's move on to American Superbike. In qualifying, you had 10th, Chris Paris, 9th, Jeff May, 8th, Chris Ulrich, 7th, Jake Zimke, 6th, Eric Bostrom, 5th, Tommy Hayden, 4th, Larry Pegram, 3rd, Jake Holden, 2nd, Josh Hayes, and taking his first pole of the year, Ben Bostrom. It was notable that Eric Bostrom actually out-qualified both of the Jordan Suzukis, and that's notable because they are all on Suzukis, and this is Eric and his team's 2nd race with that bike. So congratulations to them. Brett McCormick actually crashed out with about 15 minutes to go and slipped down the order. Miguel Duhamel qualified in 15th, which wasn't too bad for an old guy making his comeback in the series in a bike he hasn't ridden that much. Some testing, but not that much. Let's go to the race. Ben Bosham took an early lead, but then ran wide in the top of the corkscrew, letting Holden and Hayes go by. Bosham would battle his way back to the lead, with Josh Hayes following closely, but not really able to do anything, as they would battle to the end. Holden, on the meanwhile, would slip back, but not that far, but it was a great showing for his last time out on that bike, since Hopper will be back at the next round. Let's go to the results. Jeff May took 10th, Chris Paris 9th, Brett McCormick 8th, Eric Bostrom in 7th, which is not bad considering he got ran wide in the first turn and had to claw his way back from about 15th. Jake Zinke took 6th, Larry Pegram 5th, Jake Holden took 4th, Tommy Hayden took 3rd, Josh Hayes took 2nd, and taking his first win of the season was Ben Bostrom. There were a lot of people who were happy for Ben, even in the GP paddock. As he came back, he had to stop for hugs and handshakes all the way down pit lane till he made his way into victory circle. It was real nice to see Ben Bosham back on that top step in American road racing. It has been missed. A couple of little notes. Hopper, like I said, will be back in the next round. Blake Young is still out with his broken back. There's no real time frame on when he's going to come back as far as I know. And there's no word on Aaron Yates yet, which is surprising, because he did injure his leg quite some time ago, and I guess that he's having some complications trying to get that all healed up. Well, that's going to about do it for the AMA report from MotoGP OD. The next time you'll hear from me will be after Round 8 at VIR, August 13th through 15th. Until then, back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
All right, so very cool. It was very nice seeing Ben Bostrom back on top of the box. Josh Hayes was second, and he was a little cranky about that. But I got to see all of my AMA pals this weekend and do a lot of hanging out in that area. Daytona Sport Bike Race was epic as ever, and the sort of, we kind of call it the kids super sport race, but that was a great race too. So it was nice seeing the AMA guys getting out there.
Jim Race here for MotoGP OD. I'm here with Adrian Hawkins, who is, what would you really call yourself as far as the lead dude on MotoCiv?
Holy crap. We're going to go back to that last question. you thought
I was going to let that go?
Everything and anything, I think, is the best definition. You know, lead engineer, let's put it that way. You know,
okay.
Michael's got the designs, the understanding of where he wants the project to go.
Uh-huh.
There's a method to get there.
Yeah.
And that involves all the engineering. Now, Michael does a lot of that with me, but fundamentally there needs to be one person that defines the model, the drafting, and then the product that you produce. And so every component on that bike has engineering involved with it to get it to this level of, you know, going around the racetrack. You can have a design intent, which is the view at the end of it,
yeah.
your viewpoint where you want to be in 2011 or 2012, but fundamentally to get there, you've got to produce a product that works. So everything, anything that is involved in getting there, that's what I deal with, that side of it. So predominantly I was a mechanical engineer, race engine designer, and now we've moved into this electric drive field, which is a very interesting field from a performance standpoint.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily green. I think it has a lot of aspects to green, but you know, we're approaching it from a performance point of view. So yeah, the whole electronics, the whole mechanical package that goes to produce that bike is, I guess, what I deal with. So I don't know how you define it.
You know, it's actually kind of nice, at least at this point, to hear somebody say that the aspiration isn't necessarily green, because frankly, right now, what we need to do is push the technology, because eventually we'll fall back to green. But you're talking about race motorcycles, and race motorcycles mean performance. The whole green thing is fine. I'm all good with that. But when you're building a bike to run at the top of the field, regardless of what, okay, so you're deeply involved in the C1 project, you were involved with Cosworth way back, you're still burning, you know, plenty of carbon, but it's actually nice to hear somebody acknowledge that what we're doing is we're still cutting edge, and eventually, you know, we'll get there at a certain point.
I've always been fascinated with what gets you around a racetrack quickly.
Absolutely.
Does it matter if there's an ice motor in there, nuclear, but whatever.
Yeah.
So there was a large attraction to the understanding of, I think Ducati coined the phrase, line of force to go around the racetrack.
Yep.
How you best utilize those tyres, because that's your only method of actually getting around the track quickly.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a really good point. Racing is all about friction, frankly. I mean, tyre traction, everything comes down to that at the end. And regardless of the motive force, as you say, be it, you know,
braking, cornering, or accelerating. Yeah. The three aspects of
it. The only difference being is that you guys have had to react to a very different, obviously a change in, like, torque. Your guys' torque is insane. Of course, it's multiplied back down again or divided. But I'm still astounded. You know, every time, I talk to Michael, and we had a long, long conversation. I've talked to Mark a whole bunch. And which has led me, actually, I don't even think I want to talk to Michael about this again. I'd much rather talk to you. Tell me how you went from the C1 to the E1 PC, because that must have been such a mind change.
Let me rewind a little bit further.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time, nearly a decade at Cosworth Racing, on the kart and IndyCar projects. And one of the projects I saw through from start to finish, just as a lowly designer, was the XF engine. Now, when that came out, that was the most powerful engine on the grid. We were up against Honda, Toyota, and Mercedes, I believe, at the time. But we had terrible problems with what we call drivability, or with bikes, rideability, or even simpler than that, the ability to come out of a corner and then get back into the next corner.
Traction control.
Yeah, the line of force. Okay. Incredible problem. And it took them about a year to really go through and actually refine that to the point where it would actually work and you could use that power in a meaningful way. I mean, I think this is what Mick Doohan did with the 500s all those years ago. So I've always been fascinated with that. So the C1 was came out of Michael's mind, and then I came across to help him with the engineering aspects of the powertrain, chief designer for the powertrain. But the attraction of that project, whether it worked or it didn't work or whatever, taking that discussion off the table, it was all to try and get around the racetrack quicker with a slightly different package, which was the forks, the longitudinal engine, the contra-rotating cranks. It was all designed with that vision in mind. And I understood that and wanted to be a part of something that was potentially going to produce a better riding experience that the rider could take. So anyway, when that project kind of came to an end, and let's not discuss that. That's a whole different chapter in the history.
Mike and I already talked about
it.
It's still there.
Okay, so let's leave that chapter. Yeah. And I've always been fascinated with, this control of the rear wheel. And electric drive seemed to circumnavigate, let's put it that way, all the layers of electronics that were needed to tame an engine. You got an unruly 1,000cc four-cylinder
with
240
nasty horse, weird peaky.
It could have it. It might not have. The F1 engines that I didn't work on directly but was a part of at Cosworth had incredibly flat power curve.
Sure.
However, you change the throttle degree by 5%, say lower, you might not necessarily get 5% less at that point in the torque curve. It's a very fluid's the wrong word, but it's probably the best way to describe it. If you took all the torque traces from 5% throttle up to 90 or 100% throttle, they would overlap in places because of the tuning effects of the inlet functions of the.
I'm going to ask this, and so for the listeners, and you can't even do it. I know you're not even going to tell me, but tell me what your. Sorry, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but what is your torque curve? So Jim is drawing with his hands an imaginary line. What is your torque curve like right now?
For the electric?
Yeah.
It's almost like the opposite if you turn it around 90 degrees. Well, no, the other way.
It's a upside down bell?
No, the opposite way. So it starts off very high and then drops off.
Okay. Whereas, well, that's kind of normal, though.
A standard ice would be kind of lowish and then rise up.
Okay.
So it almost fills in the area that you don't have on an ice bike.
Okay.
Would be the best way to describe it.
But, okay, sorry. Diversion there. Go back, please, if you can remember what you were talking about.
Yeah, and that's my problem. So really, it's all about this ability to control the rear wheel.
Yeah.
And I thought, and I think it's been proven to a degree with Michael's feedback from riding it, that we have now complete precise control over that rear wheel. So we can actually, as the throttle opens from 0 to 100% at any point in the rev band, mm-hmm. how a curve can be your sure, okay, can be this ideal progression, linear progression of torque to the rear wheel.
Okay.
Which means when you ride it and you want to come out of a corner, it doesn't matter what point in the RPM range or what point of throttle, when you ask for more, you get the correct amount more. So this allows then the rider to control it better. Let's go a bit further. There's a lot of theories about why Big Bang engines work, or
crossplane or whatever.
A whole lot of theories, and again, that's another chapter, and let's not go into that. But with electric, we can do something like that. We can tune a tire. So if the tire actually does want this kind of slip grip at some point in its degradation, we can do that with the controller. We can program in. You've got your basic torque you want, say it's, so you're demanding 180 foot-pounds out of the motor. We can then...
Let me pause you for a moment. So I've spent a fair amount of time looking at, like, maybe rally, you know, outputs and stuff like that. I understand looking at that kind of data and looking at, like, you know, 30 different kinds of inputs, and the difference being is that you guys actually probably have to look a little bit less, except for you're also looking at, I guess it's kind of like, you know, fuel as well on the back end. How close is it to, you know, going back to your work with Cosworth, as to, I mean, are you a data guy at this point? I mean, besides actually designing and building the engines.
You're asking me if I'm doing that side of it?
Yeah.
Okay. There's no one else who's doing that, so...
Okay.
not to that degree or that level.
Yeah.
But enough to then feed back into the design and understand
okay.
where we need to be moving it.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd like another 5 or 10 guys to do that work, but yes, I do take that side of it on board.
That would cost money. question. How often do you fight back against Michael's ideas?
We're actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm going to answer this question. I'd like to go back to the other one because there's another aspect, but I will answer this one quickly.
Chicken?
No, I'll answer it. Again, Michael thinks quite a way in the future. I mean, and nobody knows the future, so is it right, is it wrong? Who cares? That's another question again. I as an engineer, are usually firmly planted in the present, because somebody says, can you do this?
This needs to be done today.
Yeah, and it's yeah. like, well, this. Someone says, can you do this? And it's a yes or no answer usually, because yeah. you're just working in the present. And you should be able, if you're a good engineer, you should be able to say yes or no.
Sure.
But Michael thinks a little bit further. So you actually need someone who's prepared to go, 90% of it is a yes, and there's 10% that's no. So let's work on that 10%. And this is the bit that I know that we can do that. But what you're asking in this respect,
yeah.
I don't really have an answer for. But there's 5 ways we could try and get to that. And then we work around that. Might come to zero. You might get 5% of it, or you might get 10% of it. So I actually have a mentality of understanding that, you know, this seat we're sitting on was actually in someone's mind at some point. So is it reality or is it imaginary? It's actually fundamentally imaginary, because it came from the imagination. So
it's Schrodinger's race bike.
So, you know, we work together because, you know, Michael thinks of these designs, then has to work backwards to reality. Because fundamentally, reality is your science lab. It's the
True.
Cheapest, freest science lab in the world.
Damn,
you know,
that's good.
It's there. It's free. It's a great thing. You don't need to pay anyone to do anything.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously rooted in the present because I'm a hardcore mechanical engineer, but prepared to move in that direction.
Yeah.
So we tend to meet. Do we have arguments? Yeah.
Good ones?
Of course.
Who usually wins?
I don't know. Who cries first? I don't know. We're so beyond that. We've worked together for 5 years now.
Cool.
That you know, we can have an argument one day and then
excellent.
It just doesn't matter.
Well, look at where we're at. We're what? There's 10 minutes left. Or
I'm going to go back to another question. Why I remember, because there's another aspect
okay.
of electric drive which we were talking about. You know,
there are so many like top secret questions that I'm not going to ask you about your engine. So we'll save those for after, because Michael did say in that interview, he said, I'll tell you everything at Laguna.
After the race. So I'm going to touch on it quickly. We, because of the torque curve, which you've alluded to, the drive actually really does not need a gearbox. It's people can debate it, but you know, we've got the road load curves and we understand where we are with it. But that actually brings into another arena of actually when you're riding that, you know, if anyone's ever ridden a single speed mountain bike, they'll know the purity of actually going around the racetrack, through the trees, and you're not changing gear, you're not thinking about that.
Right.
So you've actually ended with a little bit of brain power left for actually going round through, you know, the turns.
Yeah.
So we're finding now that not having gears, having this completely linear trace, has freed off some of the mind for better corner control, better racecraft, better understanding of your environment, because you've not got, I mean, it might only be 5% brain power on your next gear or changing.
There's a bit of California Superbike school in that, because basically Keith Code has always preached this, is like, how much percentage of, you know, and I totally agree, by the way. I mean, if I didn't have to shift when I was racing, it would be a lot easier. But there's also trade-offs currently with the design, the weight, and everything of electric race bikes. I don't want to keep you too long because I know that you have to get out, because you guys are about to go out on the grid. And we're just minutes away from you guys running the FIM e-power race here at Laguna Seca. And you're probably a little bit nervous, are you not?
Not at all, no.
Did I lighten you up?
No, it's... There's a fundamental point when the engineering's done.
Yeah, okay.
When the batteries are charged.
Go.
It's out of my hands, and it's actually a refreshing point. I actually smile at this point because it's like it's
my job is done.
In the hands of the gods.
And you think everything's good to go?
Yeah, we've been better prepared than we've ever been. You know,
dude, you won a TT.
Yeah, and, you know, the bike had not turned the wheel before we got there. So yeah. Was that good? No. Did we have luck on our side? I wouldn't say we had luck, we just didn't have any bad luck this year. Everything lined up, and we are now into developing the bike. We're not fixing oil leaks, we're not fixing cracked pistons or whatever, you know, the multitude of things that require money and people.
Yeah,
we're now looking at the data and changing gear ratios depending on that. We're actually developing it now and changing the regen algorithm for, you know,
that actually has to be kind of fun, because the rest of it is just a pain in the ass. I mean,
yeah, it's just slogging through.
Yeah,
and you know, we've been doing that, and this is a bit of a, you know, reward. This
incremental changes are actually sometimes the most rewarding.
We're actually in the arena now that, you know, we have this amount of energy on board by virtue of, you know, the battery. It's limited. It's still limited, and everyone knows that. I think there'll be some breakthroughs. It's not going to get worse. But anyway, that's what we've got at the moment. So any percentage you can add really makes a big difference at this level.
Absolutely. And even if it's just a tiny bit. Okay, so 3 minutes or 2 minutes left before you got to get out and prep the bike for the race. I'm not even going to ask you for predictions, but give me your top three. Isn't that evil?
That I sincerely hope it's us. It should be us. The effort that's gone in. Michael's got to bring it home, and he knows the track. That's good. So, yeah.
But the top three is interesting in a way. I know you've probably wandered about.
I think, you know, it's going to be between Lightning.
Yeah.
Which is Barnes.
And yeah.
That's a big old bike.
Yeah.
And they've got some horrendous horsepower.
I believe the term is porky, but that's a steep hill.
Yeah, and they admit, you know, they've gone with the powertrain, and they're refining the chassis now.
Yeah.
But you know, they've got the power if they need it. I think it was something like when that was fitted to the EV1, it was 185 horsepower or something.
And that's off the old
General Motors. Yeah. So and. Second, I would just about put them. Third, I think, is going to be Crystalite, if that's the right way of saying it. I think that's a great little team.
Yeah.
Great little rider. Doing well.
It's a TZ chassis.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Twin Agni, TZ, something like 10 kilowatt hours. He did 4 or 5 laps yesterday, and his lap times consistently came down as he was learning. I think they're going to be a little surprise.
Cool. So
that's my top three. I'm sure Brammo, if they were here, I know they've suffered a little setback, but I would say they would at least be up there.
Look forward to having them back again. All right, well, you've given me way too much time. Right
before Michael goes out, and you wave him off.
Thank you very much.
Looking excited for it? Or you're kind of just like, oh, God, I'm so glad this is over.
No, not at all. Enjoy it down here.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
Totally appreciate it.
We got more fun coming, too, don't we? We got a weekend of joy and happiness coming up. It never stops.
We have. Unfortunately, I'm working, so I'm not going to be able to get down there. But we've got the Silverstone World Superbike and World Super Sport race this weekend on the new track. And Troy Corser has been quite vocal in the racing press. He's back hungry, and he and Max Biaggi are both determined to spoil the Magnificent Seven, as the press have called them over here, the British Riders Party. Plus, of course, Richie Chianari and Josh Brooks, the HM Plant Riders, who are going to be wildcarding. There's a bunch of wildcards in the World Super Sport, and it should be, weather permitting. Now, the weather over here at the moment has been, how do I put it, changeable. About 3 weeks, it's been doing a very good impression of the autumn. It's been warm, humid, but also damp. A lot of the cricket has been rained off. Absolutely devastated by that. not. But yeah, you've added your bit in here. We've got some very high quality riders coming in as wild cards.
I'm thrilled, and it'd be nice to see actually a really big super sport grid as well. And with Keenan a little bit hurt, and Eugene only, I think, I'm not sure how many points he is back, but those two are going to keep at it. There's only 4 races left, and I'm really looking forward to see how that goes for those guys.
I always wonder in that situation, who is the pressure really on? Is it on Keenan or Eugene? Because, yeah, Eugene's got to do well to close the gap, but then, you know, I think the guy out front, metaphorically speaking, looking over his shoulder all the time, you know, thinking, I remember Troy Bayliss in, which year was it, when 2002, when Colin closed down that huge gap. And I'm saying, well, you know, it's just mine to lose now, and bless him, being Troy Bayliss, he took it on the chin when he did lose it. But yeah, that's going to be an exciting last few rounds. And Christian Idden, the Supermoto rider, is racing as a wild card on the Parkour-Gar Honda, a third Parkour-Gar Honda World Supersport race bike. He is a dramatic rider to watch. I don't watch much Supermoto. It's not that big over here amongst the general motorcycle racing public, but when I have seen him, it's pretty cool.
He may end up riding like Yanni Hernandez in Moto2.
Yeah. Yeah, Gary McCoy, come back, all is forgiven.
Indeed, it should be wild. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, the weather out here, the weather for the Laguna Seca GP was incredible. It was fantastic. And really, what we're having right now is kind of spring-like weather. We're lucky if we get up to 80 degrees Fahrenheit, which is amazing for here. Normally, we're up in the high 90s or even the low triple digits.
That's got to be quite nice, isn't it?
It's too hot for me.
Must be quite nice having it as it is now.
Yeah, and we've got constant breezes. It's just incredible. And we had that same race or that same weather for the race, and fantastic. So I hope it keeps up. This show will be not interminably long, but enjoyably long. And feel free to give us feedback. We'd like to hear it. And of course, join MotoGP OD on Facebook. That is a very lively community, and there's a lot of people posting there. In fact, I will point out that Jules has started putting up some of his fantastic photos from Laguna Seca. He got just what he does every year. He gets some amazing, amazing shots. So if you'd like to see those, I believe he will also be taking his photos and putting them on a gallery at MotoGPOD.com. So you can catch those as well. And we're working pretty hard to make sure that both myself and Jules, as a photographer, have access at Indianapolis, because that place is basically epic to shoot and report from. And I am looking forward to that race. I hope you guys enjoyed all the interviews. Martin, I hope you enjoy all the interviews. You haven't quite been able to.
I certainly do, yeah.
Oh, and I do want to throw a quick thanks out to Adrian Taylor. You might remember that story that I told about how I got together two gentlemen, one that had tickets for Catalunya and one that didn't, and I hooked them up together. Adrian went, had a fantastic time, and he was cool enough to send me a very, very nice polo shirt from the Catalunya round along with the program. So, Adrian, thanks, man. That was very cool. And Eric Sterner for actually getting him the tickets. Wow. Now what?
Yeah, the Suzuka 8-hour race had a 51 team entry list, which was the second lowest ever. That sounds quite good, doesn't it? 51 teams. And I think we're probably at the end.
Yeah.
We may not be, of course, because you may have a couple more interviews still to squeeze in which case, enjoy. And if we've got them all in by now, which Jim's going to do the editing job from hell. Good Lord, I don't envy you that.
It's fine, you know, in a way it's going to be nice to listen to them back again, and maybe I'll glean some additional information that we can talk about for next week's show when we review Stillerstone and we start thinking more seriously about Brno.
Yeah, I know. 3 weeks, what are we going to do?
There's a lot to talk about. This part of the season, even when they're not racing, there's so much going on. I'm really looking forward to it. Actually, watching the two-up rides with Randy Mamola was fun this weekend too. And I got to meet Sharon Mamola. I met so many people. It was incredible. Having access to the media center was very obviously handy. And there's people there that I like to talk to as well. So,
oh, and a very last point for any British listeners, on the 7th and 8th of August, which is a week this Saturday and Sunday at Llangollen, is the annual motorbike show. And it's being opened and then having a couple of talks from Carl Fogarty, multiple World Superbike champion, holder of the most World Superbike race wins, etc., etc. Everyone knows who he is. And if anyone does go along, and if you find the Wales Air Ambulance stall, you'll see me and Sharon. We're doing our charity bit for the weekend, basically just trying to mug people for money to keep the helicopters flying. So, and hopefully I'll be able to go and listen to one of Carl Fogarty's talks whilst we're there, because we've got other volunteers helping us out. But weather permitting, that is a great – we went last year. It's a fantastic show. It's not the biggest, but it is pretty darn big, and there's some amazing stuff there.
Cool. And plans permitting, I will probably be talking to Carl in time for next week's show, including somebody else as well. Going to be a three-way call, so I'm looking forward.
Fantastic.
All right, Martin. Hey, it's been too long. Let's let's try and talk a little bit more often, and I hope you folks out there in MotoGP OD land enjoyed the show, and feel free, as always, to use the contact form at MotoGPOD.com to send us email. Once again, we always try and write back. We don't always get you. I know there's at least one person that wrote in. I'm sorry, the name escapes me, who managed to miss us during the meetup on Saturday, and my apologies. Not even us really knew where we were going to meet, except for a big red dot. But we'll make sure that we coordinate something even better at Indianapolis and with a lot more headroom and leeway so that we can hook up and talk to you guys, because those are always fun. Those are always fun. And I'll make sure I've got even more stickers. In fact, I'm restocking these stickers, because they were incredibly popular there, and I gave an awful lot away, and I'd like to be able to share those with those folks out there listening. So, with that, Martin.
Jim.
It's been excellent.
It's been fantastic, and looking forward to World Superbikes this weekend, Brno 3 weeks, and hopefully the start of the conclusion of the silly season. Fantastic. Thanks very much for incredible work you and Jules did this weekend, and really, really buzzing about it, and can't wait to hear these interviews that have already been. Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome. Thanks, everybody out there. We will talk to you next week.
Good night, all.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.
Give me your full name first.
Adrian Hawkins.
Okay, that's cool. All right.
It's not as cool as yours. Anyway.